Gaddis, at the very bottom of page 79, after the large quote. Mao gave ground on October 7th, promising eventually to send up to 9 divisions to Korea, but not at present. That was not good enough for Stalin, given the North Koreans' increasingly desperate military situation. "That you do not want to send troops to Korea is your own decision," Stalin told Zhao Enlai and Lin Bao, who on Mao's instructions had arrived on October 9th to explain the Chinese position. "But socialism in Korea will collapse within a very short period of time. The Russians and the Chinese should, accordingly, begin making plans to provide the North Koreans sanctuary." Shortly thereafter, on the 13th, Stalin ordered Kim Il-sung to evacuate North Korea altogether. The Soviet Union would just have to get used to having the United States as its neighbor in East Asia. Khrushchev recalls his dejected superior as having concluded, "So what? If Kim Il-sung fails, we are not going to participate with our troops. Let it be." But the prospect of a North Korean collapse further shook the already shaken Chinese, who had not realized the seriousness of the military situation on the peninsula. Zhao asked Stalin whether the Chinese could count on Soviet air cover if they did in fact intervene. Stalin immediately replied that they could, as well as on other forms of Soviet military assistance. Having digested this information, Mao sent word also on October 13th that hesitations by our comrades occurred because questions about the international situation, questions about Soviet assistance to us, and questions about air cover were not clear to them. At present, all these questions have been clarified. The Chinese would at once send 9 divisions, however badly equipped, to defend North Korea. Soviet air would be critical, though, and the Chinese hoped to see it in place within 2 months. On receiving this message, Stalin quickly instructed Kim Il-sung to disregard the earlier order to evacuate his country. "I am glad," the relieved autocrat added, "that the final and favorable decision for Korea has been made at last." What this new information suggests is that although Mao had certainly inclined towards intervention since the summer of 1950 and had authorized preparations for it, when it came to the final order to proceed, he got cold feet, presumably because of disagreements among his subordinates. There followed several days of indecision on his part, and as the Chinese record is careful to note, several sleepless nights. In the end, he did decide, as he revealingly put it, to order the People's Chinese Volunteers to march speedily to Korea to join the Korean comrades in fighting the aggressors and winning a glorious victory. But it had taken intense pressure from Stalin to push him into this, and the Kremlin leader managed it in the end not only by confronting the Chinese with the prospect of an immediate North Korean collapse. "Not to have intervened," Mao cabled, a still skeptical Zhao, in his own version of a domino theory, "would have meant the reactionaries at home and abroad would be swollen with the arrogance when the enemy troops press on towards the Yalu River." He then added, in language whose circularity reflected the anxiety that lay behind it, "We hold that we should enter the war. We must enter the war. Entering the war is greatly to our advantage. Conversely, it is greatly to our disadvantage if we do not enter the war." Could alternative American policies have avoided the Sino-American War, for that is what it was, that lasted at great cost to all sides from late November 1950 through July 1953? Perhaps, but the new evidence narrows what the range of such actions might have been. Obviously, if the United States had failed to respond to the North Korean attack in June of 1950, it would not have found such a clear justification for interposing the Seventh Fleet in the Taiwan Strait, and hence so, irrevocably offending Mao. But Mao was already alienated from the Americans, and Acheson was finding it increasingly difficult to fend off critics of his position that Taiwan should remain outside the defensive perimeter as he had proclaimed. It is entirely possible, therefore, that the naval deployment would have taken place in any event, and since Mao was planning his own invasion of Taiwan, any American action to protect Chiang Kai-shek would surely have incurred his wrath, quite apart from whatever was happening on the Korean Peninsula. Whether Mao would have intervened there,